This episode and all of our Sundance coverage is brought to you by Rode Microphones and My Rode Reel. The world's largest short film competition is back, bigger and better in 2017. Head to myrodereel.com to sign up now. Welcome to the No Film School podcast. I'm Liz Nord, editor-in-chief of nofilmschool.com, and this week I'll be chatting with director Joshua Z. Weinstein, cinematographer and co-producer Yoni Brook, and lead actor Menasha Lustig from the Sundance Film Festival's surprising breakout hit, Menasha. Yiddish is a language developed among the Jewish population of Central Europe in the 9th century as a mix of their Biblical Hebrew and the German and other modern languages of the day. Before World War II, it was spoken by upwards of 13 million people. Today, in the U.S., it's estimated to only be spoken by less than 200,000. So it was definitely an unusual choice for the script written by American director and native English speaker Joshua Z. Weinstein on his new film Menasha. And that wasn't the only unorthodox choice that was made. The movie was filmed with almost all untrained actors from within an insular, ultra-Orthodox Jewish neighborhood in Brooklyn, and the script was developed alongside its star, a man who had never seen a movie in a theater. Perhaps even more surprising is that the feature not only made it into this year's Sundance Film Festival, but got renowned executive producer Chris Columbus on board just before the event, and afterwards landed a deal with A24, which distributed last year's biggest indie hit, Moonlight. I met up with Weinstein, along with both the film's DP and its lead actor, at Sundance, to talk about their unique production and path to success in making this film about a widowed man who's trying to convince his traditional community that he's capable of caring for his young son even though there's no longer a woman in the house. By the way, during the interview, you'll hear the terms Hasidic, Haredi, and Lubavitch, which are all ways of describing different members of the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. So here we go. Welcome, everyone. I would love for each of you to introduce yourself and your role in the film.
My name is Joshua Weinstein, and I'm the director, co-producer, co-writer, and co-cinematographer of Menasha.
So my name is Menasha Lustig. Stage name, and I am born with the talent of acting, writing, and happens to be people likes my acting more than my writing, so I have to connect to the people, the demand. One day I met with a guy, Joshua Weinstein, and he clicked on me and say, I see you have something unique, I want to talk to you. And maybe we'll make something in a Jewish film. So I told him, it will never happen. So you say, you never know. Let's try it. Okay, we try it. We change numbers. And they start the game. We met a few times. And he started writing down notes from my life. And he creates a whole script. And he asked me that after that if it's enough kosher. I says, yeah, I have no excuse. You could go further.
Yeah. So we'll get back to more about the process of making the film. And so in the meantime, let's not leave out our friend Yoni Brook here.
Hi, I'm Yoni Brook. I was a co-cinematographer and one of the producers on Menasha.
Cool. So so again, we'll get more into process, but as kind of the backstory, making a film is hard. Very hard. It's one of the big themes we have at No Film School. And this seemed like the pre-production was even harder than most, and sort of in terms of getting the film off the ground. So I'd love to hear those backstories first.
So Yoni and I had actually been talking about doing a project in the Hasidic world for years and have just enjoyed going out to these incredible celebratory events like Purim, which is kind of Jewish Halloween, where the streets are filled with kids dressed in all sorts of funny costumes. And you can just walk into people's house and see a glimpse of the world that on most days you'd never see. I mean, the thing is, Haredi ultra-Orthodox societies are purposefully cold. Purposefully off-putting because they do not want to be part of our society. They don't want us to see their society. So on these days that Yoni and I got to be there and meet them, it was just eye-opening and so special that I knew that it was worth a really deep dive to make it. So starting in 2014, I started in earnest doing research to make this movie, where I would walk the streets, and I come from documentaries, so I'm used to coming with a camera. The camera's always on me, and I'm always feel like this nervous, anxious energy, like you have to be filming, you have to get these moments. But the beautiful thing was, when I had the pad and paper, it was just like I could just really observe and just be there for the moment. And during that time, I was also casting, so Yoni would come, and we would go out with a camera and do audition tapes with ultra-Orthodox people to see who had the chops, you know, to really handle a film. And when the day we went and met Menashe up in New Square, I mean, he's known as a comedian in the ultra-Orthodox world, but honestly, he could just do anything. I mean, he has pathos, he has empathy, he has something bittersweet, he has real raw emotions that were immediate just in our small camera test. And then at that point, once I knew Menashe had the ability and the tenacity to star in a film, I started interviewing him to write a script loosely based on his life, so that as a non-actor, he had great source material. So we just commit two main ideas, which is that Menashe is really a whittler and that his son lives a few blocks away from them. And we took that source material and then constructed a narrative that uses a neorealistic slant that I just wanted to show these incredible moments that I witnessed in my months of hanging out there. So obviously I can go on and talk about this more, but maybe if you want to ask more questions or ask other things, I can get into it.
Well, I do have questions for everyone, but in terms of just this topic, so you're working on the script and you're doing your research, but I imagine there were a lot of hurdles early on in terms of getting access or permission to film. I know from my own experience that, like, members of the ultra-Orthodox community don't like their image even to be shown or taken for modesty reasons. So how did you deal with some of that stuff, even just convincing people to let some outsider come in and film and do this whole production?
Yeah, it was very challenging. As you said, most Haredi people refuse to be in a movie. So early on, I reached out to Danny Finkelman, who runs a company called Sparks Next, and he makes incredible music videos and Jewish content. And I just couldn't believe the access he had in that community. And it's because he is a Lubavitch person. So with his help, he really was the entree into that world and helped us have a lot of access and have a lot of authenticity and a lot of respect from people, because a lot of people respected that he is a religious man and that he understands what the boundaries of acceptable behaviors are.
Can I say one thing? I think that, you know, fiction filmmaking has sort of a rap that you come in with your ideas and you kind of create them from the world and impose an idea upon the world. And I think the reason Josh was able to make this film and capture the kind of authentic performances and get a glimpse into this world is that I don't think Josh came in and imposed an idea. I think Josh went in from the inside of the community and actually made the film with the community. So he mentions a producer of the film is inside the community. Menashe is inside the community. And so I think Josh was able to not come in and impose an idea upon the community, but to allow the community to feel like this is a film that actually has values and morals that are good to have out in the world. And so in that way, we had a lot of challenges filming. At the same time, at its core, members of the community wanted us to make the film, which required a lot of trust building on Josh's part.
So following up on that, Menashe, what were some things that you remember that Josh and his team did to make you feel comfortable participating early on? And on the same note, on the flip side, were there moments where you thought, I don't know?
So really, my experience of dealing with people, I have a lot of people who fooled me, you know, didn't pay me normally, to underestimate me. And I feel I have a talent and people didn't get it. I could make stuff, but it's not professional. I have to find the right guy. So finally, I get to know someone who knows me. We get to feel the chemistry each other, that we understand each other. He knows my talent and he's professional. So let's go. We can do something. But who knows if he's trustable? And if he's even is trustable, who knows if he understands what the consequence would be, whatever after that. So he contacted me with this Danny Finkelman, who Danny Finkelman works with other stuff. And I have my brother-in-law, Lieb Schmelzer, is also very known. So Lieb Schmelzer makes for him stuff. So he knows very well. Lieb Schmelzer grew up together with me. I say for Danny, I think it's not for me because maybe Chabad could do it, but I understand my community. I'm going to get more bad feedback than good feedback. So I have to thought if it's okay with me, if I could emotionally take it. Not to get like knocked down, you know. You try to do a good thing. And so Danny called me up. That's the point. And he told me, listen to me. That's opportunity you don't want to lose. And all the fronts, spiritually, for your talent, for the whole world, for everyone, and for yourself. It's opportunity. You met a talented guy, a guy who has a lot of trust. You could trust him. And go for it. Go for it. Jump in. Please jump in. Trust me. I say, okay, Titan, you, how do you say, Achrayas, your opportunity, your responsibility. Yeah. And there I go.
So then I really want to talk about how it was shot. So we're coming up to that. But I'm wondering, so one of the things that was so exciting about being at the Q&A after your screening was that you mentioned this, Menasha mentioned that this film was the first film you had seen in a theater and you were on the screen. So the question for Josh about that is, how did you work with actors who might not have had the same points of reference cinematically that you had?
So yeah, most of the actors in this film had never seen a movie, let alone acted before. So, which had its challenges at the same point, their faces are incredible. You know, their mannerisms are incredible. And we would change the roles to fit the people that we cast. I mean, it was so important to make it feel authentic and alive and simple. Simple is not the right word. I'm saying it's really authentic and to make it feel real. And so that the case, it also comes down to how me and Yoni shot the film. Like from day one, it was created to make it, this was an actor's movie, you know, out of Cassavetes in the sense that like we did global lighting. We didn't have marks for the actors. We shot two cameras so that, you know, all the actors could just be in the moment. And if there's a great take, we'd have the reactions from both sides. So, I mean, just by creation, we knew we were working with non-actors and we knew that our goal as production was to let them be great. And that instructed every part of how we produced this movie.
I was actually thinking a lot because I know both of your work to some extent. I was thinking a lot about your documentary backgrounds and was even struck again in the Q&A when someone basically referred to the film as a documentary, even after you had been on stage discussing the script, which actually I think speaks volumes about how authentic and sort of intimate the movie did feel. So I was wondering, from the perspective of shooting and setting up your shots, what did you bring with you from documentary filmmaking and what did you have to let go of?
I mean, I think, yeah, it seems that documentaries always want to be compared to fiction films, and fiction films, a compliment is to say they were so real, like they could be a documentary. So it's funny how that works. And I mean, I think for me, what I think Josh and I really brought from documentary, more than the camera style, handheld, simple lighting, more than that stuff, I really think the main thing we brought from us was trying to have like a sense of empathy and humility in working in this community, because there's lots of very talented cinematographers and you know, I think the number one thing we could do every day was try and make everybody feel in that community that we weren't like an outside force coming in to invade their space or privacy. So I think, you know, it helped that Josh and I had been working together, you know, from the beginning in casting the actors, that like the first time we met Menasha, I think Menasha and I were doing acting exercises together. So, you know, it sort of helped that, yes, I was, like, you know, shooting the film, but I think it helped that Josh and I had a relationship that made it feel like, you know, we're all in this together.
And also from documentary, you embrace chaos. And sometimes I think we worked really hard to create chaos. at the same point, because it's that sloppiness, it's that messiness. Like, that's what feels real. It's kind of like, there's nothing worse than you see a fiction film, which is just, it just feels staged. You know, it feels like you are watching something that feels fake. There's nothing real there. It's like they haven't even seen what life was. But for us, it's like, by making things feel, you know, slightly dark, backlit, flary, something obstructing our views, like all these techniques that we do from documentaries almost intuitively helped create something that elevated the acting and elevated the movie.
That's really interesting. Can you think of any specific examples of where you kind of like messed something up or did something more organically rather than set up formally?
One of my favorite scenes in the film is a throwaway scene, but like absolutely every time I watch it, I laugh. And it's about a beggar on the street. And we shot it with 2 400mm lenses. And we were, you know, a half block away from each other. And really, it's Menasha walking to this beggar, and they get in a little fight with each other. But as we're filming, people, because we're so far away from this beggar and the beggar looks so authentic, people are actually putting money in his cup where he's begging for it.
It's a great way to fundraise for an independent film.
Yeah. And anyway, so just that moment, and to have the real world interacting with your actors is incredible. That authenticity like permeates every frame of the movie. And just imagine like an AD blocking that scene and how many extras would have needed just to actually pull it off. I mean, in a big budget movie, it would never felt the same.
I actually assumed that some of the film had been shot verite and that scene was one of them. I thought that was just some guy that you happened upon. I'm shocked to hear that it was cast and set up like that. So was anything shot documentary style or was everything set up?
No, I mean, all the locations we had been to before had permission to be in, had, you know, good producers who made sure we had releases from everything. So there was nothing that we just showed up, but a lot of times we would go to a location. Like, there's a lovely scene where Menasha makes his own sandwich. And it's just this great place that Josh found where you can buy a sandwich, but instead of making the sandwich for you, you just make your own sandwich out of all the components. It's like such a Borough Park thing. And so, you know, there's no dialogue in the scene, but, you know, the guy behind the counter is actually the guy behind the counter who works there all the time. We didn't, you know, rehearse with him days in advance. So stuff like that, I think, helps make the film kind of embedded in its location.
But, you know, working in this world, many of the stores and organizations we worked with aren't used to film schedules, the sense that like we are coming at 9 a.m. tomorrow and we need to start working. So I just want to give a shout out to everyone who really made this film happen, which is like Tracy Carlson, Danelle Eliav, Royce Brown, Alex Lipschultz. I mean, they worked tirelessly. This is all the producing team, and Melanie Weinstein as well. They worked tirelessly just to secure that the actors showed up, called them again and again and again to remind them, you know, like went to the store locations again and again and again to remind them, made sure that people who didn't want to sign release forms signed release forms, made sure the stores signed the location release forms, you know, made sure the products that are authentic in the film, that those got release forms. You know, these products, these people have never dealt with a contract, never dealt with film teams. So there was a lot of incredible time spent just to make sure that everything was completely legit. You can never tell watching it. It feels like literally, like you said, we pulled up the camera and it just happened. But that's a testament to all the hardworking people that made this film with us, that it feels so authentic.
Well, thank you for mentioning that, because I think they're so often undersung. Those, you know, the people running around doing the stuff to make your films happen. This episode and all of our Sundance coverage is brought to you by Rode Microphones, 100% Australian owned and made professional microphones for studio and broadcast, and My Rode Reel, the world's largest short film competition. Now in its 4th year running with over $500,000 in prizes given away so far, My Rode Reel is back, bigger and better in 2017. More films, new judges, and more prizes. To view past winners and register for 2017, head to myroadreel.com and sign up now.
On the technical side, you know, no film school readers and listeners love the technical nitty gritty. So what did you shoot with? What did you light with? What were your lenses? All that.
I love the forums on No Film School. You guys have the best forums.
Oh, our forums are, they're active is a way to say, I love you guys. I do.
We shot the film with Canon C300s, the classic model, not even the latest one, partly because we started before that camera came out, but also because we really wanted to have double coverage with two cameras rolling as much as possible. We wanted to be able to shoot in low light situations. We wanted to, you know, keep a relatively low profile. And we wanted to keep a small film crew so we didn't have like DITs and, you know, camera trucks and all that stuff with gear. And we used, you know, an interesting selection of lenses as a way of kind of adding texture and character to some of these scenes. So some of these lenses we used, I don't even know what the brand names they are. They were vintage lenses from Josh's eBay searches.
Yeah, exactly. I've done extensive testing on all sorts of vintage lenses and have a big collection of them. So, but those lenses just take really the digital edge off and again, just give it a look because, you know, as much as I do love the Canon lens look, it does feel repetitive a lot. And I know they're fantastic lenses, but we wanted to just give this film just a little bit more softer, subtle, low-con look that those lenses did. And then for the really telephoto stuff, we did use Canon lenses with a lot of diffusion on top of it to do like the very telephoto shots.
So I make my own sloppy, you know, clips before, I know my way how to do it. But I have one rule, I have to follow the director what he says. So I just erase all my thoughts and how to do it. And I get to know that there's another kind of way. Because I never know how it will look and the way I'll capturing it this way, this way, this way. And for me it was like very, very hard for me, you know, to erase your thoughts of because the way I'm acting in the thing and how people see it from the lens, totally different, you know?
Right. You have to let the director direct.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually that's a great segue because another thing that's important at No Film School is we always ask about advice. So starting with you, I'm wondering what advice do you have for directors in how to work with actors who might be less experienced or who might not be as trusting?
The joke I repeat all over and over. The less you know, the more you try to teach your teacher. You know, a lot of people didn't know anything. You get to know more. You see, I didn't know anything. I have to know more and more. So I see that I didn't know anything. I know a little bit. I tried to learn. So I just erase all my, I try to suggest him if this is good. If he says, okay, I'm very happy you take my suggestion. But if not, you know, in general, the whole film is a different style that I know till now. A different style, different way. So now, let's say at this point, when I'm sitting in the audience, in screening, and the first time I hear people, was most of the people saw tremendous a lot of films. So there's not people who didn't know films. And if they laughing, and so it gives me such more feedback like, they know what they're talking. And if they're laughing and enjoying it, that means that I'm tremendous good. You know, it gets me so much. They should be a good job. So it even gives me more than he knows what he does. You know, even I have, why do this way? The people who watch a lot of clips say that's the right way and that's a kind of a style what's tremendous. That's, I get it, we made it.
Well, that's a nice compliment to you, Josh.
Yeah.
I keep calling you Josh. Is that okay? You're Joshua and all the...
You can even call me Joshy Poshy if you like.
Oh.
Also, another thing that we talked about with Yoni was that we tried to do as many long shots as possible. Like I wanted run times of shots to be 60 seconds to 2 minutes. And there's a lot of shots in the film that do last that long. And Menasha is an actor who can handle it and embrace it and do a great job. When he was with his son and you're in these moments, and often the film, like something visceral happens, like a dramatic moment happens, and instead of doing an edit, we sit with it, you know, for a long time, and instead of going to reaction shots. And it was something that I think was incredible with him. But it's something that, but for some longer dialogue scenes, we weren't able to do with them in long continuous shots.
Yeah, so actors, no one wants to make it again and again. Do it again, do it again, yeah. Do it again. I'm so happy that they say, you made it 2 times, 3 times, it's okay. Wow, I made it? Yes. So it gives me like, wow, it's great. In the other hand, you know, people get like, oh, I didn't have nerves. You know, you're not following up with the director. Get caught up, you know, like all the time. Why all the time? Because you didn't made it. Made it one time. Have the nerves. Do it. Yeah. Do it. Then you will.
It's fine. No. I actually remember when I told you to yell at Ruben that time in that scene.
Yeah, and you told me to give him a smack. I can't do that, you know. You told him, do it.
Yeah. So seems like that. Like actually, so those are some, a lot of the, because Menashe is so empathetic as a person that when he had to actually be harsh to his son, it broke his heart. And so we're constantly battling. Like he is such a present actor that these things hurt him on the inside when he has to be mean to his son. So there were challenges getting him those performances, but we're always eventually able to get there. But the whole point, just as a teaching moment to the people who do listen, is that, you know, you really have to be present for the actors, and actors get exhausted and tired. So the thing is you can't make them do the same thing over and over again. You have to have a goal for the actors. And then at the same point, if they're not giving you what you want, you have to then change your goal to fit the situation. Because at the end of the day, it's like you only have those moments, and actors only have so much emotions to give. So you just have to work with what you have there. And those scenes that we were, there's some scenes that did take longer because they're just difficult emotionally, or the dialogue is very long, and all of a sudden a scene that should take 2 hours to film or take 6 hours to do, because the actors get, it's just very, very hard for to have the talent.
Yeah, some hard points, but it was very private in person, and I understand that I could do it, but it was hard for me to do it. Even in general, I didn't have a problem to talk about my inside things, and I get some trembles, how you say, when you talk about the old emotions, but it was time when he told me, give strength for yourself and do it. Okay, even like the smack. I never smack my son. How you tell me to do that?
Well, are you glad with that he made you do it when you saw the film?
I'm glad from the outcome. Like,
right.
What's my reaction after then? But you know, when I decide I could give him a smack, I asked Reuven. I asked the son. Could I do it? He says yes.
Oh,
okay.
He was a talent. He's a talented kid.
Yeah. I don't want to hit him.
No. No.
Isn't he so sweet? He doesn't want to hit kids. Look at this guy. Menashe's available. He's available for babysitting too.
He told me. I was afraid. Or every day, maybe at the end of the day, Josh will tell me, you know what? It's a set-up scam.
So I'm going to ask you, Yoni, advice for DPs who might be kind of doing what you do and shifting between shooting narratives and docs and like kind of wrapping your mind around those transitions.
Yeah, I really think that moving between documentary and fiction doesn't feel that crazy to me anymore, because, you know, making a good documentary and making a good fiction film, it's all about trust. And the trust that Josh built with this community and our actors is the same trust that we need as documentary filmmakers to go into these situations. So yes, there was a script. Yes, we had a schedule. Yes, we had a talented actors. But I think the bottom line is that, you know, if someone's going to allow you into their house to film some private moment in a documentary, or someone's going to allow you to film a very private emotional moment like Menashe does in this film, it still has to be based upon trust. And that's not really something you can like buy or do anything except spend a lot of time earning with people. And I think, you know, maybe sharing a little bit about of yourself with people who are in front of the camera is probably the best way to do that.
Okay, last question for you, Joshy Pashy, is so it's your first narrative feature, and here you are at Sundance. It's everybody's dream. So what general advice do you have for first-time feature makers, maybe who are in that moment of like, can I do this?
I just got an email from somebody from a student in Oregon recently that said, do you have advice to give to my college class? And I think I said, ride your bicycle. But the sense that it's just that you really have to put yourself on down and a computer away and just be outside and look around and be a parent. But I know that that's the worst advice because people want to know really, really what to do. But I think it's actually, it's like, make something that you know you can make. Make something that is, obviously you have to make something that's emotionally complex, but make something that's simple in terms of production. Like, design something that's actually feasible and don't wait around for money to come. Because
if you're not doing, you don't have regret.
Yeah. And by not doing, you don't have regret.
You could have regret, you could succeed. But not doing, of sure you're gonna didn't have regret, didn't have success.
Yeah. But more as well is like, don't worry about the fanciest camera.
Jump into it.
But literally,
try.
Yeah, try. I'm repeating what Masha says because he's so genius, you know, and he actually is the real reason why the film is great. But I just think it's like people get so worried about gear and about money and about famous names, and all that does not matter. All that matters is that you're actually showing truth, which is what Yoni said too, is that like by capturing real truth, it transcends anything. And
sometimes it could take a whole decade to connect with the right guy that he says trusted, to get a trust with someone. But you're still doing it. And one day you get the right one. But not trying, you know, you're going to have regrets. I could do that. You have to jump in.
And finally, the last thing is also like back to like about making yourself is to make your own luck. I mean, no one's coming to save you. No one's coming with the money. It's like if you're not putting it on your back, it's not going to happen.
Well, thank you all so much, and best Thanks, of Liz. Luck getting the film out there. I'm so excited for what's going to happen.
Appreciate it so much.
Thank you all for listening. Menasha is playing at the Berlin Film Festival this week, and you can keep up on its release news at weinsteinfilm.com or by following Menasha Film on Facebook. Meanwhile, you can follow me on Twitter at LizFilm and subscribe to the No Film School podcast on iTunes, where you'll hear more great interviews like this one every other Monday and our Indie Film Weekly news show every Thursday morning. We also invite you to visit nofilmschool.com to learn more about the craft of filmmaking. See you on Thursday.